This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We record in the offices of Raider Solutions in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider's team lets you focus on your business while they take care of the technology. If you're wondering if Raider can help your business with any and all technology needs, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank for its support of this podcast. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered right here in Lafayette, with 329 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Visit iberiabank.com for more information. We're also grateful for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Our guest today is Ken Ritter, who has served as mayor of Youngsville since January 2015. As a city councilman from 2011 to 2014, Ken was instrumental in the creation of Youngsville's comprehensive land use ordinance, increased infrastructure requirements for privately developed subdivisions, and the residential development code. A native of Metairie, Ken has nearly two decades of hotel management experience. He also owns three Anytime Fitness locations. He earned a bachelor's degree from Colorado Technical University in business. And Ken, if I may, as a personal aside, I remember meeting you with our mutual friend, Lynn Guidry.
Absolutely.
Who's Lafayette's parish's historian and a very acclaimed architect. Mm-hmm. So it's been a pleasure to get to know you through the years, and I want to welcome you to Discover Lafayette.
Well, thank you, Jan. It's great to be here, and I appreciate the invite.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been talking a lot before we started taping, and I'd like to just jump in with the rapid growth of Youngsville. And while we're talking, you can weave in your personal story, but
sure.
you've come into Youngsville as a leader in a time of explosive growth, and it's got to have been a challenge.
It's been a great challenge, but it's been a tremendous opportunity, and one that I'm very proud to play a small part in today. Youngsville continues to grow. When I took office, it was widely known as the fastest growing community, and we've really shifted that paradigm to be more about let's talk about quality versus mm-hmm. quantity. Everything looks great when it's new. But let's look down the road, literally and figuratively, and what is that going to look like in 10, 15, 30 years from
right.
now? And that's what we've really tried to design a lot of our standards based upon. Mm-hmm. What is the long-term effect going to be? And we certainly want to welcome everyone into our community, but not just starter homes. We want to make sure that after that couple has their first or second child, that there's another home that they can grow mm-hmm. into as well.
Right.
So that's really what's had a lot of my attention.
Right. When I looked up the history of Youngsville and, of course, went back to the Roy family, it was yeah. Royville, and they had to change their name because it
right.
was confused with Rayville in North
that's
Louisiana.
Correct.
But it was really sugar farms. I mean, it was
absolutely.
Flatland, farmland. And the growth that's happened, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of concrete and farmer, you know,
yeah.
green space.
We've been fortunate to have the right blend of landowners, mm-hmm. developers, and leadership that's been forward looking. And taking myself out of that, even my predecessor was perfect for his time mm-hmm. because he certainly could have been an obstructionist when it came to growth and development. But you need to have all three. You need to have cooperative landowners mm-hmm. that are willing to sell their property, developers that want to be partners in growing great communities, and then also leadership that has a shared vision of what a
right.
community should look like.
Right. And so managing the growth while maintaining smart yeah. decisions, you know, keeping land affordable and also trying to prevent future problems. Has that been your focus? Can you talk about that?
Sure, it has been. And in fact, you know, what has my attention even as recent as this morning is looking at, as an example, our development standards and looking at mm-hmm. our permitting process and making sure that, you know, we are raising the standards appropriately, but still being easy to do business with and not losing that small town touch that a lot of people have grown to love and respect about Youngsville. When I became the mayor, we were issuing between 300 and 500 residential permits a year as an example, and they were all written by hand.
Really?
So what's been really interesting about my time in office is that we have done a lot of heavy lifting on a lot of things that have been behind the scenes, infrastructure related, you know, making sure that we have the right systems, the right processes in place to provide the right experience for our residents, our customers. And that's been rewarding. Now, a lot of that has been behind the scenes, but it does help us set our community up for success. And it's something that I've been proud of to move the needle and make sure that we're meeting the expectations of our residents of today.
You had to computerize a lot of your records?
We did. We did.
My
goodness. So, you know, permits by hand are just one example.
And so hard to find. Like, I mean, just if you want quick access to
absolutely.
Data.
Absolutely. So converting a lot of systems, a lot of processes, making certain that we were, you know, work orders as an example. Yeah. I mean, every time there was a call for public works, it was literally being dispatched from the front desk at City Hall on a two-way radio, as opposed to today, it goes into a professional work order system that's a queue that's time stamped and accountable. So, you know, a lot of things like that behind the scenes have been fun to implement. You know, those things don't give tangible results to the people that I represent. The progress on our roads, infrastructure, drainage, the aesthetics of a community and what that should look like is something that they could probably relate to more so. But it's definitely been a fun and exciting time.
Yeah.
And it running a city of a similar size and another community that is stagnant for comparison would probably not be nearly as rewarding or fun for as it is for me today.
Right. You know, to be fair, though, Youngsville was a relatively small town.
Absolutely.
Less than 20 years ago, it was what population was about 3,000.
We went from a village to a city in a very short window of time. I mean, in less than a lifetime of quite a few of our residents.
Yeah. So investing in some of these things probably just wasn't even on the radar because it wasn't needed.
No. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about your population. I saw in the news, Ken, about something that LSU polls the towns around the state.
That's right.
And so you're right at the 15,000?
Yeah,
under 15,000
population?
Yeah,
we believe we're right at about 15,000. LSU's estimate came in at about 11,000, but interesting to note, no discredit to their process. However, LSU has had the same number for, I think, the past 4 or 5 years for Youngsville. So when I recognize that, there's obviously I guess there is opportunity to improve it, because we've certainly grown over that same time period. An easy search of the U.S. Census estimate shows the 2018 estimate is over 14,000.
That's what I saw online today. Yeah.
Correct. So, and trajectory is continuing. This year, I think we're on pace to have over 200 new residential construction permits, coupled with new apartment complexes. So the growth is not slowing down, albeit I'd like to believe that it's of good quality that's built to last.
Right. At lunch today, my older daughter, Taylor, she wanted me to ask you when Poor was going to open.
Yeah.
She lives in Laurel Grove, you know, new subdivision.
Absolutely.
With her roommate, bought the home. And they just love where they live. I mean, there's so much to do for young people and for anybody.
Yeah.
But she said, ask him when Poor is going to open.
Well, let Taylor know, Poor is now officially open.
It is? Uh-oh.
It is.
For the holiday.
Huh? Yeah, just in time. In fact, over the past week in Youngsville, I was fortunate to attend 4 ribbon cuttings personally. We have a very vibrant business community that's growing leaps and bounds. And a great chamber of commerce that is engaging the business community. Four in 1 week period, Poor being one of them.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Absolutely, it is.
So how long have you lived in Youngsville? Is this a long time residence for you?
No, I moved to Youngsville in 2006. Moved there in 2006, didn't know a single person, but loved what I saw, and saw a great growing community. got involved with the Homeowners Association of the neighborhood that I still live in today. I was the third house on the street, and just wanted to get involved. And whether I was going to live in Youngsville for the next 6 months or the next 60 years, I thought an opportunity existed and an obligation to get involved and to offer myself for public service. So the Homeowners Association position catapulted me to a seat on our city council. I served 4 years, one term on the city council, which was a great experience. I had the opportunity to work with some great council members, all of who are no longer in office, but I certainly learned a lot from them. I was the new guy at the time, and that prepared me for running for mayor in 2014. And you know, frankly, that was something that was never on the radar at the time. Mm-hmm. I actually felt fulfilled after serving 4 years on the city council. I had a career. I was comfortable with what I was doing. I felt like I had made a difference and left an impact on the issues that were happening in Youngsville at the time. And then there was one night at a council meeting, our mayor surprised us all and said that he was no longer running. Mayor Vietor said he would not be seeking re-election, and he wanted to let us all know in ample time because he was finishing his third term. Yeah. And you know, I looked to my left and I looked to my right at our council, and I already knew that a couple of their intentions were to not run again. And anyway, the rest is history. I decided to present myself for that seat, and have enjoyed every minute of it since.
Right. Well, let's talk about drainage. I want to jump in, and since the 2016 flood, and we've all noticed the changing rain patterns.
Yeah.
Whatever is causing it, the rain comes in furiously, right, and it hits Youngsville just like it hits everywhere else. And I know I had heard you on an interview with Developing Lafayette's Ben Powers, mm-hmm. and it was about a year ago.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get the latest, please, on where you guys are. I know you had some federal and state grants. You've done a lot locally to try to address the issue.
Yeah, thanks, Janet. And you're absolutely right. Drainage is something that's on the forefront of everyone's mind. It was exceptionally important to me and my colleagues on the city council that we did not let the struggle of the 2016 flood become our identity. Mm-hmm. And large in part, I mean, approaching the now 3-year anniversary of that flood event, I think that we've had some success. We still have plenty more to do, but I'm proud of what we have achieved so far. There were really four things that were most important to us. One was to clean the existing system of drainage to make sure that it was working as it was designed. That was the parish Cooley system that has since been exposed, and it's pretty well known that there's been years of neglect in that mm-hmm. system and just lack of priority. But regardless of whose opportunity it was to clean it, we seized the opportunity. It impacted our residents first. I was closest to them, so we rented an excavator at $5,000 a month, and went to a neighboring parish, and we hired their best equipment operators, and we got to work on a 365-day a year, 7-day-a-week period where we cleaned the existing drainage systems. The Cooleys didn't change the course of them. We just restored them to their original grade to make sure that they could flow freely. So that was the first thing that we did. And as you know, that conversation is still really ongoing in the parish about whose responsibility it is. And the parish is now working in those in some of those Cooleys. The second thing we did was we raised our development standards. We had identified in 2015 when I first took office, we did a master plan of our community. And one of the actionable items was that we've got to change the way we are growing and the way we're developing. A majority of our residents surveyed at the time had a fundamental concern about the manner in which we were growing. So we fast-tracked some recommendations that were in that master plan to require preparation for a larger storm event on new development. And some say, well, why is that? Why was that important to do then? Well, we're a community that was growing by 300 to 500 residential permits a year. So it was important that we that we clean the existing system, that we raise standards for those that were still building. The third thing, our master plan identified about $8 million in drainage projects that should be done, which was largely centered around regional detention ponds. Mm-hmm. We hear that today almost like it's commonplace, but just a few years ago,
it really wasn't.
In 2015, I think history will show that we were ahead of the curve mm-hmm. with the help of our city engineer to put a concerted focus and effort on that. So the third thing was we wanted to seek funding to accelerate components of that master plan related to drainage. Mm-hmm. So that first week that Governor Edwards came to Youngsville to tour the flood damage, we were able to present him with what our needs were. Oh. And then the fourth thing was when you looked at Youngsville, there were pockets of areas that had considerably more flood damage. So we tasked our engineer with looking at those neighborhoods and asked her, is there something I described as low-hanging fruit? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can go back and rebuild anything if money was not a factor. But what could we do, if anything, in those developments to ensure that we don't get to that same place in a similar rain event?
Yeah.
So there were some, fortunately, our council supported that strategy. So we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to increase the storage retention within those developments. So it was simply those four things that we did. Mm-hmm. And it's restored peace of mind and confidence to our residents. There's no longer angst when there's a rain event that happens. Specifically about the funding for the detention ponds right. or the regional ponds, mm-hmm. There was $30 million that became available, hazardous mitigation grant dollars mm-hmm. that came available for an 8-parish region, and the parish presidents were tasked with deciding how to handle those funds. And it's being handled through the Acadiana Planning Commission, and they did a phenomenal job of vetting projects. So Youngsville was able to have a seat at the table to say, here's our plan, uh-huh. and this is how we're gonna achieve it. And at the same time, we watched our neighboring communities show up, and with the utmost respect to my colleagues in neighboring communities, it was almost like a pin the tail on the donkey game. Like, we're thinking about doing a project in this area, but we have we've had no commitment or conversation with landowners, mm-hmm. no modeling.
So you were like shovel ready.
It was like, very preliminary.
Right.
So because we were able to have our best foot forward from earlier planning, mm-hmm. We were successful in securing nearly 30%. Right. It was 30% of the $25 million, uh-huh. excuse me, that was available.
So you got about $8 million.
Yeah. And to date, we are still the only projects that have been vetted and approved by not only FEMA, but GOSEP, the Governor's Office mm-hmm. of Homeland Security. So,
where are those projects? Are they in the works, or is this
they are? Well, today we're in the design phase. So we have committed to a 25% match on these projects, and FEMA through the state is reimbursing 75% of our expenses related to these projects. So what it's going to entail is two projects, two regional drainage mm-hmm. projects on two large arteries that drain the city of Youngsville. The primary project is 40 to 50 acres of ponds. So when the coulee rises, the ponds take in that water, mm-hmm. and the modeling has shown that we can effectively lower the base flood elevation by a foot. On a separate channel, by doing about a 20-acre pond, we can also lower the base flood elevation in that area as well. We're fortunate in both situations to have cooperative landowners, one of which—
Are they donating property?
They're not donating it, but since we have to do a match anyway, mm-hmm. The purchase of the property is considered part of our match. And we're looking forward to it. It's not just going to be a drainage pond.
Yeah,
it's not going to be a drainage pond off the beaten path, mm-hmm. fenced in and barbed wire. It's going to be a design element of the community. We have a landscape architect that's working mm-hmm. on the design for it. And what you'll have is a community with a recreation area surrounding it. So it's going to achieve recreation opportunities while lowering the base flood elevation. So I'm very proud of our efforts of planning early when drainage was not a popular conversation to spend planning dollars on. And I'm
well, that changed overnight, though.
It did. And I'm very proud that still to date, we are the only two projects that have been let out to spend this hazardous mitigation grant dollars. So our plans are due in March. And once FEMA approves them, they have they're prescribing us 2 years for construction.
Okay.
So so we're moving fast. And like I started the conversation, it was important to all of us that the struggle of 16 would not be our identity. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud that we're on that path.
Right, right. So regionally, not just drainage, but infrastructure needs, you know, I'm thinking about a lot of big projects like I-49, but drainage in particular. Where are we on that? Do you feel that the surrounding parishes too, you mentioned the Acadiana Planning Commission, are they working collectively on these issues? Is it effective?
Well, with regard to drainage, just to finish that point, it has been a regional effort, and it's one that we should be applauded for. And it's one that I believe will be a model for other regions within the state. For Youngsville, rather, to get awarded the monies for the ponds that we were, it was a regional effort. I received a letter of support from Parish President Larry Richard in Iberia Parish, because any water that we can hold would end up, you know, not going to him.
Right.
And then likewise, a former President Cormier in St. Martin Parish was also very supportive. So it has been a cooperative regional effort.
Because they could have fought for that money themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So when we remove the political boundaries, it really allowed us to look at it from a wider lens.
Yeah.
With regard to other things, I mean, Lafayette, the region, Youngsville, I think that we have a lot of great needs, you know, and we're going to have a lot of critical discussions moving forward because, you know, as an example, prior to the August 2016 flood event in my community, at least, drainage wasn't a commonplace discussion item. You know, in fact, if there was inclement weather, schools let out. It almost created a little sense of excitement in the community. You find yourself talking to a neighbor that you don't normally talk to because you want to know what are they hearing. And, and it was largely if there was like a threat in the Gulf, perhaps. Mm. But,
now people are frightened when the rain comes down.
And same thing with...
not just in Youngsville. But
correct. Same thing with, roads. I think we have been far too tolerant of... Mm. Mediocrity and the status quo, with roads. I mean, the roads are horrible, but we accept it because we just get in our F-150s and we deal with it. And the schools are in some cases have campuses that need improvements, but we send our kids to private schools. So there's some fundamental issues about where we're going as a community that I think we need to have. And I hope I can be part of those dialogues.
As a segue, I'd like to bring up the charter amendments to Lafayette Parish.
Yeah.
We spoke about that before the podcast started. It's going to be a new day.
Absolutely.
Next year, assuming that the current charter amendment stands, if the Supreme Court doesn't shake anything up, how is that going to affect Youngsville? Not only your working relationship, it's going to be a different day with a city council of Lafayette and a parish council, and the parish is dead broke.
It is. And I unfortunately think it may get worse before it gets better. And I mean that really because when you look at the group that's running, anyone, regardless if there was no name presenting themselves for the parish council, they have an uphill battle because you're largely starting a position where there's inadequate funding, and then you still have one mayor president that's overseeing a lot of responsibility there and navigating the politics of multiple councils. I think we all have our work cut out for us. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better because with Lafayette having an independent council, I think that we should expect them to be a little bit more vocal about where the city of Lafayette may be contributing to the benefit of the parish, where arguably they shouldn't be. And, you know, my issues in Youngsville, you know, during the Fix the Charter campaign were simply that I hear the frustration, I understand it. We're frustrated as well in Youngsville, albeit perhaps for a different reason. But Lafayette Parish is a small area geographically. There's no reason why we can't just have some old school conversations and get everyone in the same room together. I think that that's an area where we have not done the best work, and I'll put myself to blame in that conversation. For us to be successful, I think it's going to take a united effort of the parish president, a majority of our council, the municipality's leadership, our sheriff, our DA, our 15 JDC judges,
school board.
I would recommend convening a summit of these folks and coming up with what are our priorities. We can walk and talk at the same time. We can do more than one thing at a time. But I'll give you a parallel comparison in Youngsville. When I took office, I inherited a budget as mayor that I voted for as a city council member that had funding for a new city hall in it. Well, in 2015-16, the conversation was about, for us, declining sales tax revenues. It was about recovering from a flood. So it wasn't appropriate to be having a conversation about a new city hall. Today, however, the climate is right. And the community is accepting of the fact that I'm having conversations about preparing for our future with a new city hall and police department on a prominent corner central in our community. Likewise, I think we're going to have to come together in Lafayette and decide what are our priorities. And it doesn't mean pitting a library against recreation, against drainage. It may mean that we've got to put some initiatives on hold. We wanted to do 6-foot wide sidewalks on a lot of our major arteries. The climate wasn't right for it when I had to instead place a greater emphasis on drainage. So instead, we shelved the sidewalk projects, which will beautify the community and which will contribute to a great place to live, but the timing and the appetite wasn't right. So I think what we'll see in our parish moving forward is hopefully more open dialogue about those conversations, about the in a transparent manner. We all, regardless of where you are in the parish, want to have a great community to live. And I dispel the notion that the needs of downtown Lafayette are different from those in Karen Crow or in Youngsville. We all want a great community in which to live, and we can do more than one thing at a time. What's lacking has been confidence in our elected officials. If we would stand together and stand united and say, we will get to conversations about parks and green spaces and recreation, but first things first, and we've got to settle everyone down when there's a rain event. So it'll get worse before it gets better, but I think this time, in 4 years from now, moving into the next mayor president election, I think we'll be looking at a different dynamic, and it'll be a much different dialogue than it is today.
I'm looking forward to that because, you know, as a citizen, I've been somewhat engaged, but not an elected person, to watch what seems to be at times haphazard tax proposals. And like, what do you, there's been no list of like, well, we do need to work on the courthouse. We do need to fix our roads. Our schools are falling apart. The airport. And I watched with amazement when the airport was able to come in with an 8-month tax, and it, they got it passed because they were ready. It's
like
your detention ponds and your plan.
Yeah.
If you're ready. But the bigger picture is, what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to make this community really a thriving place 20 years from now? Where our roads aren't falling apart and we're not still arguing about the schools.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we cannot continue to have basic conversations when we have big problems. We've got to, I mean, we can't as an example, I mean, we've got to excel at, be brilliant at the basics before we can hit the home runs. We've got to learn how to cut the grass and have a clean community before we can really go to voters and ask for confidence from them to ask for more monies. And, you know, I do think it can be done. You know, I have the pleasure of representing Youngsville, and I make no secret about, Youngsville is the highest taxed part of Lafayette Parish.
9.95.
Yes, right? And it's not from my, you know, gavel, you know, hammering down or by my signature. It's by a vote of the people, and, and we have that tax rate because our electorate has had confidence in the proposals that we've put forth. When recreation left a void, had a void in our community, we had a succinct plan to combat that, and we're able to pass a tax on an anti-tax climate.
What is that, 1%, Ken?
1% that's dedicated for recreation.
Is that in perpetuity?
It's in perpetuity.
So there's no sunset date at this.
That's correct. However, we have bond issues that I believe are 15 years, and we're already probably on year 7 of them. So, you know, what I would expect is the leadership at that time will rescind the tax, rededicate the tax, or have the conversation about what do we need to do now. My point is, when there's trust in elected officials, when you look at when you look at what's are some of the great things in Youngsville, our sports complex, our police force is very well managed, very well run, and very respectable. We've doubled the size of our police department in 2015, which is our first year in office. When you look at the things that are making Youngsville a great community, there is a tax that's associated with those areas that's dedicated. So I guess my point is, when there's trust in government, when there's trust in elected officials, you can do some amazing things. Right now, we've got to restore credibility. We've got to have candid conversations, and we've got to be brilliant at the basics before we can walk out of the dugout and expect to hit a home run with the and have the city parish cheering for us. So, what I would encourage, I mean, is that we have open dialogues with all the stakeholders. You know, some of the tax proposals, I think, have been well intended, but there was not a unified effort. There's been a lack, there's been a disconnect, I think, from different factions of elected officials. And, you know, as I would describe it, I mean, we have had, you know, you think of about a boys' room, like in a grammar school, those, you know, brown paper towels, and everybody's just throwing these brown paper towels that are wet at the wall, and just to see what sticks, you know. And, you know, I have the utmost respect for the council members that put up the rural fire tax, because that is a serious issue. You know, likewise, are my colleagues on the school board as elected officials that champion their tax proposals. But it lacked a unifying effort to where we could all stand there and say, what are our top priorities? Here are the four, and here's a plan that we'll be able to touch the four over the next 5 or 10 years.
With a visionary plan.
Correct.
Where people can see.
Yeah, and I think when we do that, it'll no longer be library versus parks, no longer fear-mongering of, you know, you're taking away the elements of the community that I love for the benefit of something that may not directly impact me. And the conversation I would have is that we're all in it together. So I think the future is bright. I still think our best days are ahead of us. I feel that there's plenty of opportunity when there's just cooperation, when there's dialogue, when there's conversation, and when the public feels like they have a voice to be involved, to be heard. And it is a incredible feeling to have the trust of so many people in my community. And that's really what motivates me to want to strive to do an even better job, because it is such a fulfilling responsibility. And we can see that on the parish level.
Yeah,
with some effort.
It's interesting about the taxes, because looking at our smaller municipalities, such as Youngsville and Karen Crow and Scott, you know, Doosan's even doing things, Broussard, the people of those towns have passed taxes on themselves
to
fund recreation. They've not worried about the TIF districts. Yeah. And you see the growth that's happening.
Yeah.
And the taxes are higher than in Lafayette. And here we just seem mm-hmm. to, we have trouble even renewing
taxes. We are, I mean, Dusan, you know, my friend, Mayor Thibodeau there is doing a wonderful job. Yeah. And he set out on a mission to overlay all the roads. And mm-hmm. he's doing a great job. But there was a plan. Mm-hmm. There was unity in the plan. And it's being executed. In Lafayette, we are a very conservative community. And I share many of those sentiments. However, I think that we, in order to have nice things, you have to pay for them. But in order to pay for them, first things first, we have to make sure that we have trust, and we have trust in our elected officials, and that that we have goals that are in mm-hmm. alignment with those that we represent.
Right. I'm looking at my notes. I know we're kind of coming up on time. Youngsville, if I looked at the demographics right, is very young.
That's great.
And as you said, conservative. Probably a lot of the kids go to private school, but you have a new mm-hmm. Southside High. And I had to laugh when I was looking at the Youngsville sports complex information. Yeah. You have two new leagues, master leagues for 50 plus.
That's right.
And then for 60 plus.
That's right.
So you're appealing to that demographic now.
That's right.
I mean, is your average person, yeah. like the average dad is 40, 45
yeah.
years old?
Average age in Youngsville is probably mid-30s.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, they're probably 33,
little people,
34.
Too. A lot of little people.
A lot of young kids. Uh-huh. We have such a great opportunity with our sports complex.
Yeah.
We've had we just celebrated our fifth year from the opening. We have over 1,500 kids that are in the baseball, softball, t-ball program, 900 in basketball, 400-ish that are in volleyball. Soccer is doing mm-hmm. phenomenally well. This year, we're adding additional programming. We have a great tennis facility that's well-run and managed mm-hmm. by a great pro. We're adding programming for beach volleyball,
that's
which we're real
fun.
Excited about.
Yeah.
That's under construction today. And we're adding a flag football league mm-hmm. That's from Football in America, FNA, which is Drew Brees' league.
Yeah.
So we're thrilled about the opportunity to partner with mm-hmm. the best in the business there. So
people can stay home and have a vacation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And
staycation.
It's even getting better because, you know, this past month we had an MMA event at our rec center. This fall we have a boxing qualifier. We have gymnastics next year. So we're just getting started.
Yeah.
So we want to make Youngsville not just a bedroom community, but also a destination mm-hmm. for recreation.
Right. Well, Ken, we're here in Raider Solutions, and I want to get in a plug. I understand that they do your computer work. So it sounds like you're in a good place today. And Jason Sikora is our sound engineer, and Jason's been writing notes. He's always got great questions.
I do have some questions. First of all, Ken, thanks for being here and for showing up at the office.
My pleasure.
Glad to give you a tour. And yeah, we've worked closely with you guys on several projects, so and it's always fun. So my first question was what made you get into politics, but I think you already answered that. So we'll just move on after that. But hotel management to mayor.
Yeah.
What skills did you pick up as a hotel manager that work well for you as a mayor?
I think there's a lot of similarities. In fact, you know, in hospitality, those that worked with me knew that I summarized it and said it was cleanliness, friendliness. My mom always told me, be kind always. So hospitality has a lot of similarities with politics. In hospitality, you have to have an even keel personality. You have to be you have to exercise urgency when it's appropriate, but you have to be fair but firm. And I would say similar characteristics to probably what a coach may have. I'm not a coach, but however, I think hospitality has well prepared me. It's you know, I arguably am running a big hotel today, so
fair enough. Yeah. All right. So, what's the toughest part of politics that surprised you after you got into it?
Yeah, the toughest part of politics is that you're always on. You know, in a traditional job, most of us get to go home and turn it off. You know, politics is largely a big game of PR and perception, and it doesn't matter how good of a job you think you're doing. It's how good of a job your constituents think you're doing. So I've had to learn how to effectively communicate through whatever means of communication our constituents want to speak to me. And so whether that's in person or whether that's sending me a Facebook message at 2 a.m.
Oh, boy.
It's being available. Now, I may not answer at 2 a.m., but it's I think really just realizing how much you have to be on and how much you...
Accessibility,
absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. And similar, what's the best part that surprised you after you got into politics?
Yeah, the best thing about it was it's been a very rewarding experience for me. It's been a lot funner than I thought. I have the best job because I get to go around and talk Youngsville and represent the interests of the 15,000 people that I'm so fortunate to represent. So, you know, last week alone we had four business openings in Youngsville. So I'm proud to play a small part in our growth, and you know that I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. So
excellent. All right. So let's say Chris Rader or Jacob or somebody here in the office wants to get into politics. What kind of advice do you have for him?
I would say don't do it. No, I would. First advice I would have for anybody that's interested in politics is. Be careful what you ask for, and I mean that with the utmost respect of anyone that wants to present themselves for public service, because as with any competition, there can only be one winner, and so you have to be equally prepared to win, and you have to be equally prepared to lose. And so I think someone should really ask themselves, how am I going to feel in both of those scenarios, and you know, what's my motivation, I think, for running? What's someone's motivation? And I think when you can answer that question for reasons that are above yourself, I think that perhaps that may be the best advice that I can give. You know, you don't want to get involved because of a singular issue, because the role of politics is much broader than a single issue. But if someone feels they have it inside of them to serve, I would encourage them to at least consider it, you know, but keep in mind, be careful what you ask for, because you might find yourself to be the mayor one day.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Don't get into it just because you want to fix the roads, because there's going to be a lot more to it.
Absolutely.
Than just fixing roads.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. One thing that you would like to achieve as mayor of Youngsville?
Yeah, well, really what consumes a lot of my time right now is finishing what we started. We set out and spent our first couple months doing a master plan for our city. Drainage was a huge component, and I'm committed to fulfilling the drainage ponds that we've been working so aggressively towards. I was in D.C. last week having conversations with various stakeholders about that. That's something that we've got to get right. It's something that I'm excited about. I think it'd be a value add to our community besides just lowering the base flood elevation. So I want to see that get completed. I don't know, maybe a couple more roundabouts if my city council and our residents allow me to.
We need to get that into the podcast. It was in our video before, but there are no red lights. Youngsville.
Yeah. We keep you moving.
Yep.
And we mentioned, I didn't even realize that until you said it. And every time I'm right on the edge. So we go in quite often into Youngsville. And there's no red lights. It's crazy.
I'm sure there's a few stop signs.
Oh yeah. And we're told the roundabouts are much safer, which they are, but I have to confess, in full disclosure, I think it was in March that I did rear end someone in a roundabout.
I forgot about
and
that.
It was my fault, and I regret it happened, but
of course,
accidents can happen, but it is much safer than a traditional.
Well, they can happen at red lights too. So
absolutely, yes, you're right.
Well, awesome, Ken. Thanks for being here today. I appreciate it. And Jan, thanks for letting me ask some questions.
Oh, great guest, Ken Ritter. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Jan.
The purpose of this show is to you know, let people get to know our leaders, but also just to have this interview on file for people that want to get to know you. And I think you've shared quite a bit of yourself. So thank you.
My pleasure. And anyone that's interested in learning more about Youngsville, I will be available. I'll make myself available. It's a great time to relocate. It's a great time to open a business in Youngsville. We're charging no commercial permitting fees.
You're still
for
not
the rest
charging.
Of the year.
Yeah. You're very business friendly. I know.
We try to be. Yeah. We try to be. And so let's meet if someone has a desire to be in Youngsville. I'm happy to have that conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking time with us today, and thank you to our listeners. You can find this podcast with Mayor Ken Ritter of Youngsville and all of our podcasts at discoverlafayette.net. They're also published on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Alexa, anywhere you get your podcast. Please share it also. It helps if you can have people share these interviews and let them know what we're doing. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.